Didn't hear him yet.
Okay, so it looks like we have enough.
And there's also Mike Beller, my colleague from ADOA. He's calling in as well.
Okay, so we've got a quorum, it sounds like, at least in terms of those three folks here, plus folks that are here. But we'll go around and introduce ourselves. And just a slight delay from our usual 10:30 time because of the hookup setup and the new location and all. And that. And so on my left is...
Barbara Carling, Vice Chair and Social Worker.
I'm Adrian, only a guest.
Thank you, Adrian. Welcome.
I'm Patrick Kogas, my member advocate.
Patrick.
I'm Paul Carlson, member of the system.
Chris Klemenich, liaison of the committee from Department of Administration.
Melissa Brown, I work for Arizona Complete Health.
Michelle Quiros, I work with Kodak. I'm a quality management analyst.
I'm Sharon Faulkner Gillespie. I am an adoptive mother who comes of kids who came through foster care system, as well as my brother was in the system, as well as I work with foster care with Intermountain Centers, doing therapeutic and regular foster care.
Hi, team. My name's Dave Rutenberg. I've been in the system for too many years. I'm a member of Kodak and La Frontera, and I'm a certified peer support specialist.
And Ken Carroll's chair since 1994.
For electricity?
Yeah.
I couldn't resist.
Thank you. You might end up being chairman, so be careful. Before we get started on as far as the agenda there, but at least we'll start. Is there anything as far as the room? Everybody can hear us okay? As far as the...
The telephone's much better this month.
Oh, good, Joe.
Hi, Joe. Good.
We're up in 222, which is like a courtroom setting here, but it doesn't matter. But, I mean, just so you know, we were at kind of last-minute scramble on that. And so, as far as the minutes were passed out, I take it. Of course, you guys don't have it. Did you get it electronically sent to the members? Or
I had sent it, like, the day after last month's meeting. So, I don't know if you all got it, but...
Nope, did not.
I got it.
Susan got it, or Dorothy?
No, that was Susan. I got it.
Okay. So
Joe, did you say you
did not get the minutes?
Okay, Joe and Dorothy, you need the minutes. I can send those to you.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thanks to the world of smartphones can be out there. Okay. Looking at the minutes, kind of a...
Yep. We're good. It feels like a whale.
Any additions, corrections, changes?
On page 3, Connie and Barbara will schedule a meeting next week on the boarding home site visits. Connie and Barbara.
I'm sorry, can you speak up a little louder?
Sorry. On page 3, in the second column from the left, a couple of sentences down, it says Dorothy and Barbara. It should be Connie and Barbara.
Oh.
That's all. Okay. Little thing.
I gave out all my copies of the minutes, so if you don't mind taking those for me.
I'll keep both. Yes.
Thank you.
Connie, not copy. Connie, yeah. Okay.
Any other additions, deletions, changes, or moving on?
Looks good.
Okay. Motion to accept those with those additions or corrections.
I make a motion to.
Barbara makes a motion. A second by...
Eighth.
A second by...
Second.
Thank you, David. Okay, let's get into Chris. You want to take it from here, at least? And you said there's someone else from your office on?
Yeah.
Can
Mike, I don't know. Do you want to introduce yourself and let everyone know what your role is with the committees?
Okay. So my name is Michael Beller. I am an administrator for ADOA. And so with the transfer of the independent oversight committees, we were looking to stand up a structure in the short term. We appreciate you being patient as we work to figure this out. Part discipline in the last 60 days is we've been trying to learn what the committee's expectations are. There's 11 different committees currently, and soon to be another one, I think. It's our goal in this to ensure the effectiveness of the committees by their own definition. So that's to engage you all folks, develop processes and to ensure that you're successful while also interfacing with the other state agencies to get them to come along and clarify their roles and expectations as well. And so ADOA is interested in being the intermediary to ensure both an effective IOC and effective state-level operations.
Okay. Any questions of Mike to while he's on here?
Yeah, I have a question. This is Joe.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe. Thank you.
I think I heard him say there were 11 other committees. I'd like to know what other committees there
sure,
are.
Sure, those are COVID, but let him talk on it.
Sure. So with the statute, they created the independent oversight committees, I believe it was in the 70s, established committees in DES, Access, and DCS as well. Within the Access one, the expectation, although it's not in statute, includes another committee, which is the Arizona State Hospital. It was never really created in statute. It's referenced in rule, and it's always been the expectation that there would be a committee there, is my understanding, and so that's the other one. Collectively, because there's committees in multiple regions, that's where the 11 exists from.
Interesting.
Right. This was a result, I think, Senator Nancy Bartow, I think, introduced the bill and it actually created this larger network across all HRCs, across code departments.
Correct.
And that. And later I can have more specifics on that as we have come on issues. Anyone else? Anything else? As we're talking about just this general intro with the transition. Thank you, Mike.
So the last thing that I'll add is Chris can send out my contact information, but it's really important that if you guys have expectations or frustrations or areas of opportunity, that you communicate those to me in advance so we can incorporate those into the future structure. I take it very seriously that it's my responsibility to find or to act as an intermediary between both the agency and the oversight committee. And we would like to stand that up in a formalized set of processes to ensure that we're successful in all, you know, all the time. And so if you have those ideas or areas of opportunity, please send them my way.
This is Susan Moreno, and I have a question.
Sure.
In that list of other agencies, I guess, that you said there's an oversight committee, it seems like some of the lists are the agencies that we're supposed to be overseeing. Am I hearing the list incorrectly?
So each committee is responsible for a different geographic region, or if not a geographic region, a different agency. So the way the statute is structured, there's very specific functions for each committee that falls under each agency. So in reference to Access, the committees are broken up by REBAs. And then their roles and responsibilities are defined in rule, whereas the DES committees are broken up by DES region, and then their responsibilities are actually defined in statute. And so that's part of what we're looking to flush out, is to provide that clarity and say, how is it that we can have an effective committee and also a successful agency? And I think that those two things have to happen simultaneously from where we're coming from.
Okay, Susan, did that answer?
This is Joe again. I have another question or two, if I could.
Thank you.
First off, yeah, I'd like to make a statement. At the last month's meeting, we were told there would be no hard copy minutes, and we would have to use the internet and listen to the minutes. I would like to make a suggestion that that be rethought. I know that there's been minutes provided this time, but, you know, it's awful difficult for people, especially volunteers, to spend another 2 hours listening on the Internet to the minutes, and I don't think that some of us might not be able to understand what's going on or who is talking without hard copies of minutes.
Well, Joe, I can... I didn't mean to cut you off. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I can speak to that. So we're aware of the concern, and it's certainly very legitimate. So what we are in the process of doing is procuring a transcription software so that we can have both an audio recording and a written transcript of each meeting. So that'll alleviate the need to do minutes, and it'll still provide a written copy. So we don't have that as of yet, so if you'd like, I am willing to do written minutes again for this meeting, but I hope that the option to have a written transcript will alleviate your concern there.
Well, that definitely should if it's a good transcript.
Okay.
And the second question I had is, you know, I'm not really sure where or what the duties and responsibilities of this committee are going to be with this new setup. And maybe you're going to talk about that, Chris, but if not, I'd like to maybe get some of the rules that apply or what statutes apply or what...
Sure.
Sections of law or rules or procedures or whatever, you know, documentation on what the committee's duties and responsibility are going to be underneath this new system.
I think that's a great question, and so I do want to clarify something, which is that while the committees were moved under ADOA, it's not my intent to or our intent to come in and blow up the process, right? So I don't want to present this as like, hey, we're going to make all these changes and that's coming down the pipe, because that's not what I meant to convey at all. Instead, these committees have been long-standing and operated for quite a while, and it's our goal to ensure that the committee is successful. So if you have ideas on how the committee can be more successful while we're learning about our pain points and our frustrations, Chris and I definitely want to know those areas of opportunity so that we can address them and sort of do it right, if you will, so that way we can ensure the committee is successful to the intent of the statute.
And Joe, I did send out a copy of the Senate Bill 1450, which contains statutes. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. I read it, but I mean, that was pretty vague to me. I mean, you know, under the old system, we had the Rule 29 or whatever it was from the Administrative Code and a couple other things.
Yeah.
You know, we had bylaws and you know.
It is vague, Joe. That's why
I don't have any of those things anymore.
That's why I left. That's been a pain point for us. How vague it is. You're exactly right. So that's really those are the ARS 413803 and ARS 413804. Those are the only two statutes governing the committee. So I'm glad you used the word vague, because that's exactly how I would describe it. So I think that's one of the things we want to do is work with you all. We want to work with Access and you know, our agency internally, all three of us trying to get on the same page as to what the expectations are, who's responsible for what, because I think ultimately the most important thing for you all is not internal behind-the-scenes politics, but having a workable, valuable committee, and that's our number one concern, too. So I can't tell you that it'll be a quick process. Obviously, trying to get everyone on the same page is difficult, especially where there is vagueness in the statutes, but that's our firm commitment to you, is to have set defined roles as soon as possible.
Well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate it, and it sounds wonderful. You know, I just want to point out that you have a chairman there sitting in that room that's been with this committee basically since it started, and I think he would be a great one to give you ideas and information about how the committee
Absolutely.
Has operated and hopefully can and should operate.
Absolutely, yes.
And you too, Joe. I mean, as far as background and experience, many of us around the table that just can't, but yeah, but thank you.
Well, and how can we get added to the committee as a member? I mean, because I've been coming for a while, so I was wondering what would be the next step.
I'm glad you brought that up. I don't know.
There is a form for that.
Yeah, so we, Mike and I have drafted a form. It just needs the very final approval from our leadership, but I'm very hopeful we will have that very soon, this week, if not next week, and I will email that to all of you and post it on our website once it's finalized. If I could take your email address down, you can give it to me after.
It's so usually it's three meetings, record. And then you get,
yeah.
Nobody gets.
The application process, essentially, you give us the form, does include a background check. We'll get that started. The committee, I believe, makes the first recommendation of whether or not someone should be a member. Then it comes to our director, the director of ADUA, for ultimate approval. So, but yeah, we'll have the form to you as soon as possible.
So, yeah, then let me know, and then you get it to share,
yeah.
And I'll get it.
Yeah.
And
I'll give you both my
but
card.
Three times, and I think you've been here more than three times.
Okay.
And that's as a prerequisite that David was alluding to.
Okay. If it's okay with you,
sure,
Dr. Carroll, I'd like
please
to go through some
over.
Of the action items that you had for us last month.
Good.
So, I guess the first one was in terms of membership outreach. I know Dave in particular said he wanted a brochure. So basically what I did is I took the access brochure and I just updated it with ADOA's information. So this will be, I guess, kind of a temporary brochure if you want things to hand out. But I printed like 20 copies if any of you want to take a few. So that'll just have all the up-to-date information. You can take as many as you need. So we'll also have a copy of that. I can email a copy of that around if you need to print more yourselves.
Thank you.
So, and certainly if there's any feedback that you have on what should be included, what shouldn't be included, let me know. Like I said, I really just took the access brochure and made some slight modifications. So there's that. I already talked about the application forms. So in terms of, I know there was concern expressed about the reporting that you're receiving from Access, both the level of redaction and the type, I know the seclusion and restraint reports.
Yeah, I was, Cox was down and I
couldn't,
but okay. I did give you all a copy last month that had all that stuff on there. It wasn't an actual, but it was, it showed all the redaction.
So I will tell you just from our perspective at AUA, we've heard similar concerns from the other agencies. So we want to be working collaboratively with Access on that. So we will be meeting with them within the coming weeks. They've told me they've been very busy with the rollout of the Access Complete Care. Mm-hmm. So we will be meeting with them very soon to address your concerns as well as the concerns of other committee members. But if there is anything specific you would like me to address with them beyond the seclusion and restraint reports and the heavy redaction, please let me know.
Oh, and in coordination with that, is there going to be a mechanism? Because all I can do now is just open it, review, and that's it. There's no mechanism like Amy described in her notes, and I talked to her briefly, where she had like an icon or whatever to actually send something back to the powers that be to say, I have a question on this case. I need additional information, and I don't have that capability.
Oh, sorry, I'm all new with this. So are you referring to on the FTP server, Dave, or
The QM. We don't have the seclusion restraints still, but we do have the incidents and accidents have actually been broken down into the actual event, not the. It's not just titled accidents and incidents and accidents, but I've been trying to look at, and we have tons of this, but I'm not going to print out.
Yeah.
I mean, each one's like 17 pages, and there's only three paragraphs that you can read. And so it's a waste of resources on my end. It'd be easier to have that. I may not have full access, because I know Amy had full access. Because she had that same problem, and then Giselle or somebody did something.
And forgive me, is Amy a former committee member?
She was the a former vice chair, and she ran the reports.
Okay.
And she was able to hit the button and send it back to wherever it came from, and was able to ask questions or have things clarified, etc.
Okay, I can follow up on that as well. And if there's anything else you think of after the meeting, simply send me an email, and I can address it. I think that's really all I had the other action items. I did send you a copy of the Senate Bill 1450. If any of you didn't receive that, please let me know. Dorothy, I, if you didn't receive the minutes, I can send you a copy of that with it just to make sure you have it.
Okay.
Did anyone have any questions for me or
okay,
anything
so the,
to follow up on?
Chris will send link, you said, to open meeting law. Are you going through that?
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. So I think Dave helped me out on this one a lot. I think Jason might have been confused in terms of whether there was, like, formal training or not for the open meeting law. I think he, Dave, you said he was just, there's a video. Is that what you were
talking
about?
Well, we were trying to get, if I remember correctly, there was a telephonic or other bill that that Yazelle set up like 3 or 4 times, and unfortunately, I was unavailable, and a few others were unavailable.
Okay.
And so we recommended either CD if it was only sound, or DVD if there was actual video, and they don't cost that much to make, and just to so we could just run it on our computers and see what is going on.
Yeah.
Type of thing.
Yeah.
She said she was looking into it, but then but your committee then took over,
right.
She had no jurisdiction.
Okay. I will follow up with both Access and the Attorney General's office to make sure we can... Because basically, so what you're saying is basically you just want a copy of the same training that everyone else has received.
Well, yeah,
in the group.
And anybody else that missed, Barbara?
Yeah, well, I actually attended online the first one, and it was lengthy. It was hours I was
there, and then
came to find out that it wasn't even complete.
Okay.
So then I was unable to attend online the next one. So
yeah.
I would love a chance to learn what we're supposed to learn.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because Mike and I were actually talking about this last week, that, you know, there are some relevant portions of the open meeting law that I think you all need to know and learn, but you don't need the whole thing. So I think we have some contacts over at the Attorney General's office. I'll reach out to try to maybe get a short Cliff's Notes version. If not, then I'll try to do it for you myself based on their notes. Okay, I will follow up on that.
It's going to require some patience, because what's become clear and for Chris and I with this is that we're not just level setting with the independent oversight committees around this. We also have to level set with the agencies, because it seems like even with full-time employees of the state in these different agencies, they're unaware of all the requirements and our expectations, as well as the AG's expectations. So we have to clarify with them.
And Mike, I'm sorry. Can you just explain to everyone what level setting means? Because I don't know if everyone knows what that term means.
Sure. So it's become clear, like Chris and I have received feedback from the agencies about stuff that the independent oversight committees are doing in the way that they're operating currently, and very specific matters we didn't have any concern with, and so what's become clear in this is that part of us doing training isn't just to provide training to the independent oversight committees. Part of it is also providing training to the agencies as well. And so that goes back to our commitment to ensure that the committees are successful. We want to make sure that the people that we're interfacing with at the state agency level are just as knowledgeable about open meeting law, so that way there's not a perception of conflict or somebody identifying problems where we don't have any. So, and that goes back to our commitment to the committees to ensure that the committees are successful as well.
No question.
Sure.
Does that only apply to the open meeting law, or does that include like the portal access, or what? Because it's a bit vague. There's, as I said, there's no how-to or guidance. So if we do our own bylaws like Amy and I started to, we have no idea if we're going to run afoul of what your folks are trying to accomplish. And if we put all the time and effort into it, it'd be a real...
Yeah. I hear you. I think part of it is, like we said, we have to make sure that we're keeping open communication with Access, because I think what I've learned from my experience overseeing rules and regulations is part of oversight is understanding who you're overseeing. So you as the committee overseeing Access Behavioral Health, I think it's important that we're all on the same page. That it's not it's as little adversarial as possible. I'll say not completely non-adversarial, but so I think when it comes to issues of those types of things, it is a bit separate from meeting on public records law and things like that.
Well, for Giselle's, she did say that we would have to update our bylaws and add a couple of other things, but she said it wasn't that responsibility had been taken and given to your department, so she had no more say in the matters, as it were.
Yeah. That's correct.
So we'll work with you with your committee to get the bylaws reestablished and get that all up and running. Before we put anything in writing and set some bylaws, we want to make sure that we know what it is we're doing, and that's been part of us, you know, coming in and learning about the committee and the way in which you operate and where it is you think the areas of opportunity are that we can do it better. And so once we have all that defined, then we'll be prepared to move forward on that.
Yeah. And Dr. Carroll, I don't know if now is the time or if you want to do it later on, but I know we had talked in email with Dave about if you wouldn't mind, you know, kind of giving Mike and I a glimpse into what you do throughout the month, not just here at the meeting, just so we have a little bit better understanding of, you know, how you're operating. So I don't know if you want to do that now or when.
That's new information, but new agenda item. I just want to go through the...
Okay.
And then come back to that. And of course, part of that function, as you can see on the agenda, is how we report here what we've been doing through the month.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that aspect of it. I didn't want to lose, because oftentimes things get up for follow-up and then mm-hmm. they don't get followed up. I think here you said you would do the 1450. You've done that. Melissa will follow up on issues identified by Dave. And then I think you guys get a chance to...
I don't know if I get a hold of him.
No, I didn't receive... My follow-up was getting specific information on the incident that was reported.
Well, she sent it to Melissa first, and then I guess she sends it to you. If I have to resend it to you...
Yeah, would you? Because I don't remember seeing that
I'll go dig back.
And I'll make sure...
It was regarding...
I don't have your email address, so I usually just send it to Melissa, and she...
Yeah, you can always call me as well.
Yeah. I'll give you her contact information again when I send it to you.
Good. So we'll share that. And that was regarding transportation.
Yeah, I did.
For the record. Okay, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I did get a little bit of updates on the transportation. So everybody already knows a lot of things are going to change 10-1.
Right.
So we would actually like to have somebody come in and talk about the transportation system in November versus now when we don't have everything worked out because it's going to change. Because there are going to be quite a few changes. The providers are no longer going to be mandated to provide transportation to members.
Only two are doing it now, and that's
Lock and Tara. Now, they can choose to, but they're not mandated to do it.
And so, Hope. That's it.
So one of the things that we've been looking into is maybe getting, and this is just discussions, it's not something that we're going to do for sure, but talking with SunTran about getting bus passes for people, like a monthly bus pass or whatever, we can get going.
So there's some follow-up on that as
absolutely.
Far as to do. So it's not just like...
This is Susan, and, you know, I've got kids that need transportation.
Right.
And a SunTran bus pass just won't work.
Right.
Regardless, maybe, but yeah.
And your
so is there anything that's been worked out to accommodate them?
Would you mind sending me like an email just describing some of the barriers that families are going to experience so that I can share it with our grievance and appeals team who's leading up that area for transportation? That way they're definitely aware of what type of barriers people are going to have and that, you know, a bus pass may not help.
I'll just say.
Yeah, you got a 10-year-old kid.
Yeah, you can't.
Or, you know, an 8-year-old child, it's kind of hard to put them on a bus. So.
Right, or a baby.
Was that Melissa? Melissa, are you asking me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, if you could just send me, like, a few bullet points of some, like, important barriers that you feel that the families that you're working with are going to experience as a result of not having that transportation.
And okay. Even speaking to maybe how a bus pass wouldn't solve that situation as well.
But I think a lot of it, too, if you could...
I'm sorry, what did he say?
Just speaking to some of the barriers that the families that you work with are going to experience as a result of not having transportation from our providers. And then also,
right.
Also speaking to how like a bus pass would not remedy the transportation needs for your families.
When I think of okay. that a lot of our regular foster parents, like they work, and if you mm-hmm. have the 2-year-old that's doing bonding and attachment therapy, they're not able to get off 2 times a week to be able to go take them and transport them.
Right.
So I think you're going to find a lot more issues with the children. I don't know about the adults, but with children specifically around therapies and appointments and stuff like that.
Would you mind sending me something too? I know you're probably real busy. Yeah. Just the more information we have, probably the better. And,
no,
and I knew that it was going to be a shock to people, but I figured I would let you guys know ahead of time so that you don't find out another way.
Yeah. Lily shocked us at this Empirica meeting.
I know some people already probably know, but...
I'll get a hold of somebody at the health home, too. My husband is one of the directors over at our health home for children, so I'll talk to him, too,
okay.
and see if
yeah.
I can get some barriers and collect
anybody? Wait,
thank
I think that
might
be
one of my staff. I just came across a barrier to the bus allowance through the agency just last Saturday when I found out the agencies are changing the requirements for the agency sponsored monthly low income pass. They have changed their requirements of the member to entitle them to their monthly pass, which I mean this directly affects me as well. It has been a for years that a client any interaction with their case manager, with their doctor, with their case, with their counselor, anybody in their treatment team that counts for one of six interactions required for the bus pass every month. And just this last Saturday, when I was talking with my case manager about activities that qualified for that and keeping an eye on those activities, I found out that I was told that only group activities were going to be accepted in that. Now, I interact with agency 6 days a week to some degree. I have interactions with housing, with case management on a regular basis, and now none of that qualifies, and my schedule doesn't permit me to necessarily go spend another hour or two sitting in to additional groups. And that affects... many, many of us.
Right, absolutely.
So how can we...
As far as what you have to attend to get a bus pass, that's decided by the actual provider, so that's going to be different from each health home or each provider. So if that's their new plan, I could suggest maybe putting in a complaint or expressing that that's not going to work for you and discussing maybe with your health care coordinator some other options to make sure that you get there.
Just one thing, Lily dropped the bomb saying that Kodak is basically doing, if I understood her correctly, she said that they're doing away with bus passes and they're doing away with the transportation department almost totally. That came from upstairs, and so a lot of people got into an uproar right over, instantaneously, and she said that will be effective as of the 1st.
But another thing is if you don't get anywhere with your particular provider that you're enrolled with, then let us know so that you can make a complaint with us if they're not attending to your needs.
First,
as far as Dave, we don't have, if they're talking about Sympatico, we don't have a transportation department.
No, Lily's from Kodak. She's up here.
Talking about Kodak. So from Kodak, we, as soon as we received the communication from the health plan, we're starting to discuss how we're going to tackle on those changes. So we are letting our members know that, you know, for transportation, you know, they can call their health plan to arrange transportation, but also
working with their health care coordinator on what they can set up for transportation, whether it be Centran or... So we're also trying to maneuver with the new changes. But we are letting all of our members know as soon as we find out the information, letting them know ahead of time so that they can be prepared or get some knowledge before the change happens.
And I'll continue to update you, like you said, Karen, on the updates from us as far as transportation.
Okay.
And then we'll see about somebody coming in November to give a presentation, if that's what you guys wanted to do, right?
Okay. Okay.
First of what were the changes you were mentioning, Dave?
According to Lily, she's a peer support specialist, and she reports to Dr. Barden. At least that's what she says. She reports directly to Dr. Barden.
But October 1st? Is that what
she said as of October...
Well, October 1st is when change
yeah. Right, okay. And that basically she said the entire transportation department is being phased out and people are going to have to... There are not going to be no bus passes. She says there's going to be a lot of obstacles for people going like to the pharmacy, grocery store, doing her laundry. I mean, she had a whole laundry list, and she didn't realize the impact until she actually did it herself. And so she said that they're waiting for Simpatico and for the brass to try to figure out something, because a lot of people just don't have those type resources to get around and do stuff. And Centran is getting a real limited on what you can take on the bus.
Many of these people are in CPS cases or other kinds of court cases where they're mandated to attend these activities and are completely dependent on those passes.
Right.
Do you have
Melissa's communication?
I don't.
I'll give you my card.
Afterwards,
yeah.
you can talk. Just trying to connect the dots here so we don't...
Concerns that I have and Adrian has.
Oh,
thank you.
Great, thank you.
Sure. If you guys want to meet after the meeting, we can talk.
Yeah, let's do that. Jake,
okay.
We've got a lot to cover here. Going three of us, I don't want to cut anybody off, but if you could follow up so we could do that. I think you have here that as follow up on that 301 West Oklahoma setting. And I did some follow-up. I think I talked to Melissa as well as to the folks up on the fifth floor of DES, DDD.
Mm-hmm.
That's not one of their facilities or homes or settings. They were not cognizant. I talked to the manager for housing in DES, DDD. And I talked to Melissa. Then I also mentioned it to Bob Olfest, who's on the first floor of this building, who's in charge of housing and oversight of licensing, that is, in the health department. So it remains a mystery as to just the ownership. I didn't go down to look in the archives and try to find out who owns the property, etc. At this point, this was given to us, of course, by Sergeant Jason, and I just wanted to make sure that we cover as much as we can at this point.
Well, it's not a home that's in our system.
Yeah.
I emailed you, I think. Did you get it?
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
You did. Now it's one of those. You know, close the loop on it.
Yeah.
At least it wasn't ignored, and we've done as much as we can to find out who's in the home. But it's not your, you know, as far as our folks here in that sense. Melissa will follow up finding of both site visits and that, and you've just done that as far as the.
I was hoping that I could get a copy of the last two site visits that you wanted me to follow up on, because I don't have that information.
I don't have follow up, but that would be Judy and yours.
Yeah,
there
were
two on the minutes.
Yeah,
I thought there was only one.
I did one with Judy.
One because we didn't have any on ours.
That's what I thought it was.
I had hers at the house. What I'll do is I'll scan it and get it to you. Hers. I didn't bring hers with me. The completed ones, I leave it at home.
Whatever is easiest for you, Barbara.
Sure.
You want me to come
I'd be happy
it up
to
something.
Send you because I didn't bring hers with me.
Judy, I think she's out of town.
So I'll put that back on my list to give you guys
what
you need.
Doctors today were just saying.
Okay.
I'll put a big.
Okay, so we covered then the follow ups on that as a brief.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just want to not ignore that. Okay, let's go back then to Is there anything else, Chris? Or Mike, this relates to generic?
No, unless anyone has any other questions for us.
Okay, Jason is unavailable. Jason Sergeant, Jason Linsky. He gives us a report, an update on law enforcement. And member recruitment, I think it's a follow-up. And we have a guest here, Adrian. And this is Barbara's guest. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Okay, I wanted to introduce both Adrian to you and you to Adrian. Adrian is the proprietor at the site visit that Connie and I made a week ago. And a lot of impressive things went on there. And I'll do my site visit a little later. But I went ahead and slated you into membership recruitment, Adrian. So it's just because I just thought, because of some of the important things you were saying, and I'm very impressed. But I'd just like to introduce you to Adrian. And I don't know if at that time you're comfortable, if you have anything to say. He's just beginning to understand our committee. He asked you.
I just want to soak everything in, see what you guys do. I was just really happy when Melissa called me, because I'm fairly new to this business. I started because I noticed that there was a lot of abuse in these homes, and I wanted to make a difference. And for the longest time, I was going just based off of my own ethics, but I didn't have anyone to help me say, oh, Adrian, you should probably change this or do this better, or you're doing a good job in this area. Until they came over and I asked them 100 questions. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, he was excited when I talked to him. He's like, I want somebody to come out here and check my plate. I was like,
that's to get in a hang up. No, he must have the wrong number.
I just like to know that I'm doing ethical work and being professional in what I do.
Appreciate it.
And you're involved now. You have a group. You have a home that they visited. I realize that you guys mentioned how many folks are in your home.
My business is kind of turning at this point away from agencies. I'm working more with seniors, as independent senior living, for obvious reasons of funds. But the fact that my business is turning doesn't mean that I don't care about the rights of clients of these agencies as much as I've done these couple past years that I've been in business.
You have another perspective, and certainly would not be a conflict of interest because of someone's been receiving. So I encourage you to hope you'll come back in a couple more times and then let the group decide. Thank you, Bart. Thank you, Adrian. Anything else? We talked, Dave, transportation problems. Did that fit?
That'll be a work in progress, I guess, according to...
Yeah, that's what we talked about.
That's what I mean by being...
And then I went to the Simpatico and La Frontera and a couple of other meetings, and basically... they're still wary of the transition, so they're trying to change structure, they're trying to change, like La Frontera is now going from the org to a com, that means they can file for different types of grant and doing other things, versus like Kodak can. Kodak is condensing several sites. They've already gotten rid of the Broadway, one of their Broadway locations, and they're putting as much as they possibly can into Cobblestone and Alvernon location, and the one, it's 380 or 310, it's something with a 3, but they've got a whole new division that they're cramming into like 3 buildings, and Lily went over it very quickly. They're moving to DID, DDD, and everybody, just shuffling the deck around as much as possible to try to, because they're assuming, in her words, that they're not going to get a whole lot of support from Simpatico. They're basically, as it's come down to her understanding is that each agency is going to be basically having to survive by their own needs and what they can, their own funding. And so they're trying to brace themselves or find other funding or whatever. They're also going to be having another ACC meeting at, I believe, at La Frontera at the 1200 East Pennsylvania site, because a lot of members are going, are we allowed to change case managers? Are we allowed to change doctors? Are we allowed to, just the basics? And they still don't understand how to use the system. And when the senior case manager that acts as the liaison said, this is going to become a more service-oriented system, so you're going to, the case manager or behavioral health coordinator, mouthful, basically is going to be, you're going to have to ask them for whatever services you think you need. And a lot of it's going to be on the internet. And that was another problem that came up at the meeting, because they're looking at computer providers that will offer cheap computers and find the cheapest internet rates so that they can do things online. And they've already tried like SWS Electronics, they've tried CARE, they've tried RISE. And a lot of them have said, no, thank you. I do have two contacts that are possibly interested, but they are, they're not certified, but they are techs from, they do have their own certifications from other states. But that was the big thing, that they're not going to be doing any classwork. They want everybody to access the web, and I kept on trying to explain that not everybody has a computer or has access to the internet. And they're like, well, our focus group said, I said, yeah, I saw the thing, you had very specific group. It was very skewed. And he said, well, that's what we have right now. We don't have the, we're not going to be, whoever makes that decision is not going to be doing classes like CPSA used to do or that to guide people through the system. So, and Kathy, Patsy even reinforced that you're going to have to go through the website or talk to, and that's actually becoming like an IOC itself. She wants to split half of it as information, and then the other half is taking complaints so it doesn't reach up to our level.
For the advisory council?
At the peer advisory council, yes.
You're saying she wants to split that actual council in half?
Well, the time of it, one part for doing introduction, any news updates or whatever she wants to give out, and then the next half will be any complaints or anything from any of the other agencies that have been showing up, which are very few right now. Right. And she's been trying to get focus groups together, and apparently it has really come to full but she's trying to get things solved before they even reach our level. As I guess she's been instructed to try to get things kept at simpatico or down to the behavioral level. And also, other agencies are very interested in the new statute, like Whole Health, Marana, El Rio. They've been trying because they're now moving, and they're adding SMI, Children's Health Services, and a few other things. And they want to know if they're crossing the line or doing whatever. And they've been trying to find out the information, and they haven't been able to do so.
Okay.
Well, I'll give you that information in an email.
So by the new statute, you mean the IOC statutes? Or
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, just send me an email. We'll look into it.
Good.
And I can, if you want more information, I'll talk to Patsy because she's on the same team as me and see what the specifics are for dividing the advisory councils. And you're absolutely right. Those are forums so that we can help to solve members' issues before they have to go any higher. Hopefully that's what happens, that they can be taken care of right away there.
So, and then they asked me what our job was going to be, and I was like, well, it's a little... If we follow our old rules, we'll be doing it one way, but if they change things, I'm not sure where we're going, and we really don't. It's the laws, a lot of history, because I've read the whole thing, and I said it's a lot of history of how the senators voted yes or no on different things and so forth, but there's no real how-to or very, I didn't use the word vague, but I said there's a lot of openings in the thing of how, and they would like to have very concrete details.
Yeah.
And so...
wouldn't we all?
Life easier.
Yeah.
Let's go. Okay. So, anything else? On
no.
Okay. Moving on then, let's get to as far as death incidents.
There's just, I can only review and I can't do anything, so I'm not really bothered. I'm not printing up 17 pages to get three be totally, almost completely, was it redacted or, I always mix them up.
Redact.
I mean, there's only like six words in the whole paragraph. I mean, it's almost useless. I printed out like the one that I showed last time around, and it's basically all the same within the reports. There's very little information to go on, and there's no way to send any. And I'm not printing out 17 pages per report. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's 67 per page, and there's over 120 pages.
This is Michael. Can you email me those reports?
Well, they're on the portal. Don't you?
We don't have the same
have access to.
Oh well, we I'll need. If you can send me your email, I can.
You can, Dave. Send it to me.
To Chris and forward it on. And just
I'll work on the access too, so that way we can see what it is that you guys are looking at. Also, I have a question. Were you guys ever advised to not send the documents or share the documents with each other?
No, because you need to share a committee if two people would get together and review it.
And I have to go through email because I have an audio. I can provide medical doctor, as I already mentioned. I do almost 99% of my communication through email, just because I can see it and I have visual memory. So I very rarely use a telephone. It's just, and my doctors can provide all the medical documentation you'd ever need.
So I was just curious around the sharing of these documents and files, because I know that it was mentioned that by some of the agencies within the committees that we needed to do a better job of version control of the documents. However, I have a question, which is, if the documents are completely redacted, is there a real risk of sharing information? And I don't know that exists.
Well, and Mike, the other concern, and we have to address this with access, is is the level of redaction where it's necessary, or is it overdoing it? So that's just something we'll have to discuss internally.
I'd like to make a point if I could. I don't know.
Sure.
If you, Chris or Mike, if you guys are aware of it, the Pima County Human Rights Committee twice took the behavioral health system to court and won both cases over this redaction stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the judges have ruled two times that we are entitled to all the information that we need to do our job.
Mm-hmm.
Let me follow up on Joe, because I brought that material here. Thank you, Joe, for that introduction. But in 07, and it was John O'Dowd that spearheaded that along with Joe, and it was, again, Judge Miller here in Pima County that said we have a right to the information, obviously redacting the identity, such as the date of birth and the person's name, but as far as demographics, gender, age, this is it. So this came about in 07, 06, we went ahead. And then later, Judge Marner ruled in our favor and again ordered that the department at that time, behavioral health, comply with what his findings were. So I will bring this up, and I have asked that you, when you get back, to look this up as far as information, because we don't have to. I mean, again, our law firm was Lewis and Rocha, Rothberger, they wanted to make sure that basically that the judge's orders are being followed and not violated.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's just a promise to follow up on that, but I have that here.
Yeah, please
later.
Please share that.
We'll work on getting the agency to commit to to providing clear parameters around the information that they're going to release. So because there could be a concern, say, if they release the age of the patient and the location that they're at and the condition that they have, that information could be used to identify a name. And while I understand that, I also, from we want to make sure we're complying with the law, both from a federal perspective and from the expectations that you mentioned at the county level, I also want to ensure that you guys have the information that you need to be successful. So we need to do a better job of defining what is PHI and how it is that they're going to release information. And so you have my commitment to follow up on that as well.
This is Joe again. I'd like to throw out one other thing that didn't, and I think, unless I'm my memory is going, and I get older, I think it is.
Don't ask.
The statute that was passed by the legislature back about 2 or 3 years ago also included language that states that we are entitled to all, including identifying information if necessary.
Well, if necessary is the big thing there, yeah.
I'd like to get in here, too. Mike, this is Barbara. I used to be in charge of seclusion and restraints. It's been so well protected, I haven't seen a seclusion and restraint for almost a year. And here it is. At best, they were so in arrears in getting them to us, even if we identified them, they were long gone. You see, we never had any current information on anyone. I mean, I had 9-month-old reports that I almost cried over because things needed to be addressed. And I'm going to send you, once I get your information, a listing of what I would like to see for the seclusion and restraint. I would appreciate greatly because it's an area that needs to be monitored, desperately needs to be monitored. And I've been waiting for some sort of resolution on this, and I hope you're it. Mike?
Do you know if they have a seclusion and restraint policy or seclusion and restraint training access or requirement for these different providers to have that?
Elizabeth used to give us training, but that was years ago.
I mean, they had to, because then they also reviewed. You see seclusion restraints in the hospital settings, and so access has gone out. I know.
And we had some hard copy and. I'll dig
through
my records.
Because that would be something an area, you know, in directing the committee, if it be the committee's will, is that, you know, my recommendation would be to focus on some of those larger, overarching, more programmatic elements where they may have serious gaps and needs, where you can really drive that compliance.
Mike, may I fill in on that? The two areas that I was most concerned about, and I was watching for trends, were the missing trauma-informed history of the actual people working with these people, because it would glare off the reports that they were not being handled with trauma-informed employees. And that was one huge issue. The other one was the types of constraint. I saw way too much in one incident of chemical restraints used versus de-escalation. So those were the kind of two glaring areas that I was most interested in. What were they doing with these people? And then also, it really truly came off the page, how they were handling them in the process of de-escalation that would have caused them to create a seclusion restraint report, you see? So does that help to know those two large areas? Or
It does, and that would, again, where I'm coming from is more the administrative oversight from the committees. My recommendation would be to really push the agencies for policies, say like for around chemical restraints, what their standard protocol is within the facility or within the agency. I'm not as familiar with the system yet to speak to it. My background's more in pre-hospital healthcare, so I'm familiar with those type of protocols. And so, my commitment is to learn the system. But I know that there's protocols for these types of things, and so I would really, it would be my recommendation to advise the committee to request those protocols and then use that standard to evaluate the level of care and to evaluate the patient care reports and say that is this in compliance with their protocol, and then to use that information to provide back to access to report out on how it is that they're performing to their even their own defined standard.
Well, that would be fine, but we don't even know what's going on.
Yeah.
We have no idea.
Dave, again, about the deaths, and you were mentioning about whether a person's age or health condition. That has a lot to do with if it's an accidental death or
Well, I think Mike's speaking more to what the direction of the committee should be long term. We understand short term, this is the big hurdle we need to address is your access to your report. So we commit to working on that.
What I would be interested in seeing across all the committees is in cases where they say that information has to be redacted because it can be used to identify a specific person and they're concerned with that, then the information would at least be provided in the aggregate. And so what I mean by that is if patient ages in facilities, so let's use restraints for an example or deaths as an example, that we would get the information in aggregate. So maybe in that case it's not provided as part of a patient care report, but it is provided in a list of a whole bunch of data so that then we can use that information such to what you just spoke to, which is to say that, typically this age group at this facility, and then from that, the committee can evaluate the level of service that's being provided.
Yeah, Mike, this is Joe again, and you bring up a point that is one of my pet peeves with this committee when the new REBA came into being. With the old REBA CPSA, we used to get an aggregate report once a month that recapped all the seclusion restraints and all of the conditions and the ways that they were handled. It might have been every quarter, but I think it was once a month. And that went away when a new REBA came into a being. And I think that would be a great way, as you're indicating, to follow up on and see what's happening and setting trends.
That was resolved when Dana Hearn attended the meeting and she found that report and started providing it to you. That didn't happen?
I never received it.
Never.
And or I finally
gave it. Because it's being done as a deliverable already.
Well, I would love to get it because I could not get that. All I received over time, this last maybe since January from Giselle, was an occasional rare email with a report. One. I just threw my hands up. I thought eventually something's going to come to a head, and hopefully this will be it. Because that's exactly what I wanted to mention to Mike, is an aggregate would be perfect. I can see trends.
As a start point.
I don't have to have all the story, but I'd love to go back to even that. And I think if I look through my paperwork, unless I handed you my copy, I had that summary, and I said, if I could just get this, it would be most helpful. Because I that helped us mostly chase the chemicals.
And at the last meeting with Dana, she sent out four links involving the new bill, but that was the only information I've ever received from her.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I thought that was resolved.
No,
but let me follow up with Isabel and see what's going on with that.
That's a follow-up then.
This is Joe again. I'm sorry I keep popping up like this, but that brings up another one of my pet peeves that I've always had with this committee is what I call a tickler file. We used to do that, and I think that maybe this is a good example of why we need a tickler file. And in case you guys don't know what I'm talking about, it's just a follow-up file. The things that we say we're going to do is make note, and we ask at the next meeting, has it been done or what's going on with that? So you make sure things that you wanted to be done can and will be accomplished.
And that's what I started following up here in our follow-up column here with Chris and going through and using that same system, Joe. And we'll continue.
Okay, well, I'm not aware of it yet.
No, I mean, but we were reviewing the follow-ups in the beginning of the meeting here with Melissa and then this home on 301 West Ohio. and we'll continue. And transportation was an issue last month, so we're going to start out with the follow-up tickler side. So revisit that. Yeah, thank you, Joe. No, no, right on. Okay, anything else before we're getting kind of, this may not get too far in the weeds here. Reuben Board.
Okay, well, Connie and I went to Adrian's home, for boarding home, on the 6th of September, and I, again, am so happy with our discovery that I invited Adrian, and whom we've met. So in this case, we went to his one site, and it has three addresses, 407, 409, and 415 East 23rd Street. And I'm going to say that it is a my visual observation. And by the way, right here I have the checklist that I'm using. If you'd like a glance at what I look at, anybody, if you're interested, this is what we on the committee use as a checklist. And I have just but if anybody's interested, I'll send you a email version of it. But anyway, so visual observation. What I liked when we got there was in a nice area, but still it was fenced and secure, and near transportation. And as we went through the fence, it had a large outside area, and I believe it was shaded with trees, so there's a lot of area and tables for smoking, which is quite necessary with the population. And it was clean, tidy, fresh paint. It was just It was, anyway, I won't go any further. It was really nice. I actually took photos, but if anybody's interested, I can get you those. And let's see here. How do residents find out about your facility? Basically, they were all referrals from basically Cope, La Frontera, word of mouth, and he's garnered a really good reputation, so there's a lot of referrals coming his way. And again, the residents there, he had a few from, he had at least the one we spoke to, from Cope, La Frontera, and then Caramore. I don't know if that's, but there was a Caramore person we spoke with.
That's a health company.
Yeah, so anyway. And then meals provided 7 days. There's breakfast, lunch, and dinner, of course. And he has a cook, Lily. And then, so the meals are all provided. Very, very tidy kitchen. It had one locked refrigerator, totally understood, for their supply, and another one open for the residents to keep all their things. Oh, by the way, back to this, of course, it's unlicensed. Again, we looked at the one and toured the one that had 7 beds, and there were 4 on one side for the females, their own restroom, and 3 on the other side, males that were there. And they had, again, a male restroom, which was very nice. Rent, monthly rent, that it was $560. Let me see if I can put in more on those details. Guess not. And then one of the questions that we come up with was describe contact with residents about with their case managers or providers. And some, we got the impression it was mostly phone calls, although La Frontera, that person, case manager. I'm going to use case manager again just because.
Yeah,
and I know it's something else, but I can never remember what it
changes.
Is. And it may change again anyway. So, so, and then what I loved was the family atmosphere. My gosh. And this nice gentleman next to me, he treats them like family, and you could pick it up.
Yeah.
Okay, basically, we went through all the checklist about medications, and he follows the rules. Plus, he had the rules posted, which for someone that doesn't have a checklist, it was almost as if he'd read our checklist. And those are some of the things I took photos of, were the checklist, and then the only thing we could come up with was maybe signage for exits, even though it was so obvious where the exits were. Let me see. We talked about the meals. I think everything's generous. Everyone seemed happy along that. Everything in working order. Fire alarms, smoke alarms. I'm going to kind of breeze through this for brevity because, you know, it was just a very, very good visit. Spoke with 2 of the clients there. They couldn't be happier. As I say, I've distributed the checklist. You're happy. I mean, I welcome you to look at that, and/or I'd be happy to mail you one. And let me see. Anyway, he follows all the rules, and the people are quite happy there, and I would absolutely recommend this site. So if there are any questions, I'll just let it go.
Thank you for the door.
You're welcome.
A copy of that chip up on the electric. Pasby gave it to Yussel to keep in his building here, and now we don't have access to this.
I'm storing currently all
copies.
And so we'll
make sure they're going to the last one that I did with Judy.
She gave it to me.
You
I'm currently keeping it until we figure out where.
Yeah, we can talk about that
later on, but I just want to not lose that positive flow.
I have all the passwords.
Okay.
Any others? And anyone else want to be involved in the room and board site visits? You and Dorothy and Connie and myself?
Right.
Anyone else?
Connie and I, when she gets back from Europe, are going to schedule another.
I'd love to do a ride along if it's any way possible.
But
I was wondering.
And I'd love it, but anytime.
Yeah, because
you've been here at least three times.
Well, I've been here a few times. Right?
So the, another.
Okay, moving on to special populations. Are you there, Susan?
Susan?
We lose you? Susan Moreno?
She told me she was on mute. Limited.
Okay. You let us know. We can bump it up earlier in the agenda if she has to. You know, okay, we'll pass on that or come back to that next month or maybe just, you know. And follow up on COPE, Melissa. We had
I'm not sure what the COPE piece was because I don't have any notes on it.
It was in my notes and I went.
Because I don't know. I looked through the minutes and I don't see anything.
You should talk to Patsy. They had a whole group from COPE, and there seems to be a complaint that there's not actually medical doctors there. There's like nurse things there, as well as at La Frontera. They don't have actually like medical MDs doing the stuff, and they're trying, but it's an extremely hard process to do that and, I guess, obtain them. And so they're trying their best at with what they have.
Right.
And so a lot of them are starting to leave COPE again and trying to find, because they need specialists in whatever.
Right.
And it's getting more and more difficult because a lot of the agencies are closing, are getting a little bit more dicey because they don't know what's going to be happening as of the transition. So,
right.
Except the Patsy did mention about there'd be no more referrals, as she put it, between agencies, and that just threw the group into a, they're like, what are you talking about referrals? Where are referrals? And so it was like she had to kind of backtrack and...
Members have been able to self-refer for quite some time. As long as the provider has somebody, a staff, that can actually do an assessment.
Right.
They can do their own assessments and their own service plans.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah, which is nice, because then the members can go wherever they want.
And now it's just making sure that they're covered under that plan. So if they have banners access, making sure that that new provider is credentialed with banner. That's going to be the biggest issue that we're finding. We're finding, especially with our therapeutic foster homes, is making sure all of them are credited with everybody.
Well, like I had to deal with Banner, and like their ophthalmology department no longer is contracted with Simpatico. They're on in network, but they're not contracted. So if you have to go there under, like, let's say if you're on dual complete, for example, you have to pay the extra funds yourself. And they stopped me. They said, you're not going to be covered. So I had to find another provider that would accept both.
Yeah. And if you're enrolled with us, you can go onto the website beforehand to make sure that it's somebody that we're contracted with. So
yeah, and I have, but they don't really define what their specialty, like they can say ophthalmologist, but that doesn't say, like, you know, whether they're specialized in glaucoma or retina detachment or whatever their thing is.
And that's something I know that Arizona Complete Health is working on is they're working on updating their website. So that way, it's something that we've been working on with the council is that if you want a bonding and attachment therapist or you want a therapist that specializes in general anxiety or PTSD, you can go on there and you should be able to see. But it's a long time coming because of the turnover rate. They can't always say this therapist is going to be at Casa de los Niños
at
such a date or whatever it is, because sometimes, as we know, the turnover rate and people jump agencies. Yeah. Like my daughter's therapist, she's great with anxiety, love her, but then she left, couldn't find her for a while, and now she's back. So, but she was gone for about a year and a half, and that's been anxiety for me trying to find her. But then now that I found her, I can re-enroll my kid back into those services. But
if there's a particular doctor, though, that we're not contracted with, let me have their name, because we're usually willing to
contract
the address is whoever, as long as they want to contract.
For Banner, it's 707 North Alvernon.
Well, give me the doctor's name.
Oh, though. Okay.
Yeah,
they had, like, 8 specialties, and I contacted them, and they said, well, we're on the network, but we're just, the doctors are afraid of the transition, so.
Yeah, any doctor that you're, if you're worried about not being, or if you know that they're not contracted.
Perfect. Yeah, and I know some other people that probably be interested too, so I can see if I can get them. Perfect.
Okay. Anything else to this as far as getting back to Melissa on the doctor? Okay.
Yep. Next month we will have minutes.
And just one more as far as reports from the public. Is there anything that you would like to speak?
My name is Patrick. One of the things that I would like to bring back to the community's attention is we're seeing a lot of people that are being released from prison without their medications. I'm running into that quite a bit. And there's one individual just released from prison, and they told him it's going to be 6 weeks before he gets his medication. And I'm just seeing that way too much, and I'm seeing some of the people turning to the street drugs and finding them getting back in trouble. And I just really would like whatever we can do to make sure that if they're on medication and they're released, that you know they're getting the medication they were getting there, because I'm really seeing a lot of people really struggle.
I'll bring you guys back some information, because that's one thing that's really been beefed up recently. Like in Yuma, we have, as soon as a person's released from jail, an agency will pick them up and they'll make sure that they get their medications right away, get hooked up with whatever resources that they need. So as far as here,
there's specific timelines. I believe it's 72 hours after they're released from prison. They have to get some sort of outreach from an agency and get them scheduled in with a provider. There's specific timelines that we have to meet.
Should they inform you of when people have been released, times and dates that they think?
That's been another thing. It's if they're not enrolled with an agency, we're not going to be able
back
to know.
And then confidentiality. Yeah.
So the hope is that while they're in in prison, that they are interested in enrolling with an agency. For example, from Kodak, we have a criminal justice team that they work really closely with the prison and also jail, and they conduct intakes while they're in custody, and then once that they are released, they can schedule appointments.
And like Shayna presented, came in prison, and to you guys, we have that reach-in program. So they go in before they get out to make sure that they're connected when they get out.
Because I know the VA has that. I was actually in that prison, you know, where you do assessments for veterans. But I'm so glad to hear that they have that too.
Is that
people are obviously falling through nonetheless.
Quite a few. You're seeing it, male and female, all different ages. It's pretty out of control. It doesn't really seem like anybody is taking a look at it. You know? I'm living at a place, although I've never been to prison, where I'm staying as a homeless shelter, but a lot of the people staying there are people that have gotten out of prison. And it seems like a large percentage of them are unsuccessful, and I think some of it is attributed to them not being able to get their medications. And so many times I've heard that there's supposed to be some kind of program called a bridge program that is designed to help people, you know,
transition.
But somehow that just seems to be non-existent in way too many cases. That's the big issue that I'm seeing over at that place. And then the other one is what you guys mentioned earlier, is the transportation. I'm seeing so many people that are, the transportation is not showing up. I mean, stuff that we've been, you know, talking about and bringing up in this meeting for months, and somehow that's just another issue that people can't get to their doctors, their appointments because the cab or whatever not showing up. So their next appointment is getting scheduled for a few weeks down the road, and you're seeing the level of frustration really just escalate.
We're working on the transportation issues. Like I said, I'll keep you guys updated, and thank you for the information as well. As far as the jail thing, I'll get back with our justice team just to make sure that they know that there's people reporting those issues, that they're not getting the assistance that they
need. You might want to also call El Rio. There is a lady that was at the Simpatico meeting. She's the only one that she was in prison, and now she's a case manager or something, and she actually goes to the women's side, and she's the only one that does
awesome.
It. And
she works.
so
trenches.
But she says that they're universally overall, she's about the only one that shows up there, and a lot of the people just don't have the knowledge or the skill sets or anything, and they also have additional issues that need to be addressed, and they're not. So there needs to be, and they can't handle. I mean, they're just. She's one for one little agency.
Okay. Yeah, I met with her. That's great. At least she's helping people out.
She's doing. Good
she
work.
Is. She's working and then doing that on the free time. So.
Okay, I think I just want to make sure we're not cutting it off. I've just had a chance to speak here. Chris, did you have any closing comments or that? I think this worked out as far as this last-minute transition. Is this going to be our regular
room? We've reserved this room through December, so if you all like it, we can try to block it out into 2019.
I mean, as long as you
It's a room, right?
The main thing is
four walls. Yeah.
It's the portable, you know, as far
okay.
as the phone.
Then I will go back and we'll try to get this reserved for 2019, as much as possible.
Yeah, right. I know it gets used at 1 o'clock, and this room is used by another group.
Oh,
yeah.
There is one thing I should mention. NAMI's advertising campaign has been phenomenal. They got a grant, and they've been now listed down, and everybody considers them the first-line advocates for everything. But now, since they only have one true advocate, George Storm, and then two intern kind of people, they're getting overloaded, and it's kind of like they have to turn people away, and in every like La Frontera, Coke, they only have NAMI pamphlets. They're both Spanish and English for just NAMI, not for us or for Simpatico or anybody else.
We are working on both English and Spanish pamphlets. That'll be much more professional than that. Like I said, that's just temporary, but we're definitely working on it. And I appreciate you bringing that to our attention, Dave, because it is important. So we'll
it's a good commit start.
Yeah.
Appreciate your support, Chris. What you're
doing. As you can tell, I'm not a visual artist. But,
it's okay. We won't hold you to graphic arts.
I flunked the brochure program in law school.
Did
you have that?
Meeting adjourned.
Thank you, everyone.